Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to the Run & Stop podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
Me, Ben Hobson.
And me, Jane Maguire.
Today we're speaking with Kevin Quinn about his remarkable comeback story.
Pretty impressive weekends all round. Not just the fact that it was Easter and we got to eat lots of chocolate, but there were some serious records being broken this weekend.
Yeah,
Rapid
running. Ruth Chepengetich broke the half marathon world record in Istanbul, running a 104.02. So beating the previous record by 29 seconds.
So much, isn't it? That's such a chunk, isn't it? It's not
massive.
Like 3 seconds. It's like half a minute.
I can't do the math. What pace is that?
That's a 453 minute mile. I know. Sub five.
Can't do one of those.
Yeah, I couldn't do one.
Certainly can do one for 13.1 miles.
Yep. That's like so half a mile for me.
Yeah, that's sprinting. That's my sprints. That's my sprinting. When you see me.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. That's like flat out sprinting, isn't it?
Exactly.
Flat out sprinting pretty much for 13 miles. That's why she's a celebrated Olympic runner and we're
a world record holder, Rick. She doesn't need a podcast. She's fast.
I sometimes think that is quite funny, isn't it? Like we do, I'm very guilty of this, but we have this sort of like disbelief, don't we, about like what certain runners can achieve. I can't believe that Mo can run like, you know, 26 minutes for 10K. Why should I be surprised that he's like so much better than me? Do you mean? Well, like, why shouldn't he be?
Why am I founding all of my like my benchmark and is my...
Yeah, my, I couldn't do that. No. That's incredible.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. Yeah, because he's a professional athlete. Oh, yes, of course. Yeah. No, that's it. Yeah.
Do you like, does anyone think that when they watch like, I don't know, when they watch football or something, go, oh, that's amazing that like that person can score like a 35-yard free kick. I've hardly ever done that at Sunday league. It's strange. Yeah. Anyway, sorry, there's more. Be more records. I'm interrupting.
No, it's good chat. And I think this is the more sort of, it's not the more interesting. Well, yeah, let's say it's more interesting of the records from the weekend.
Let's go, sure.
It's with Beth Potter, the 29-year-old, ran the second fastest road 5K ever by a female athlete, finishing in 14 minutes, 41 seconds.
Wow.
Yeah, so not yet ratified as a world record due to World Athletics have to make sure there was no doping and accuracy of course measurement and the size of the laps of the race that she ran and all that sort of. Officials have begun the process of deciding whether or not it's official. But still, 14.41.
And Beth is actually best known as a triathlete, right?
Yeah, she is.
She's not actually coming with this sort of like incredible track pedigree or whatever.
No,
amazing.
Yeah.
And my favorite, if you find her Instagram, I think it's Beth Potter 91. She posted, we'll regram it on our account. She posted this brilliant photo where she's just like shocked and she's just like, what happened? Like, what? And she just did it by complete accident, which I love. Like, obviously, she's trained and she's an athlete and she's super fit, but she didn't go out there trying to do that. She was just running her best life. Is that a new saying that I've just made up?
Run your best. That's like a t-shirt. We get on to run your best life.
That's a new section of the podcast. Running your best life.
And merch, with Jane McGuire. The next t-shirt we make, that'll be on it. But I just think it's just brilliant. I love it.
Every single image from that whole night that I've seen now on social media is her looking like she's absolutely gunning it. The running is phenomenal. She's just every single picture is her just powering through. And then everything after the finish line is shock. And
yeah,
sort of
shock,
mild confusion. Mild confusion. Oh, wait a second. This is mental. And then, amazing running. She was I mean, I'm going to just do some shoe chat, which will, you know.
Yeah, no, I think it's, you know.
It diminishes her.
Worth saying.
It is, but she was in a pair of the new Asics.
Yeah.
What's her name? I'm not, Meta Speed? I don't know.
Meta Speed. I think it's Meta Speed. I wrote the story this morning and I can't remember.
It's something Meta, isn't it? Something Meta.
Anyway.
Let me find it.
Not important. She ran the race. She is the athlete. She is the one with the engine that powers her to this victory. Yep, still nice to see. I don't know, just interesting to see a non-Nike
victory. I think that's true, mate. Because
yeah.
I think it's we've talked about it before, haven't we? That if you're a non-Nike athlete and yet you still want to compete,
yeah.
Maybe a year ago you had pretty limited options as far as like what footwear you've got, but it now seems like other brands are kind of closing the gap. So I think it is actually something to be celebrated. Otherwise it's a bit like the Formula One thing, isn't it, where like, oh, you're not McLaren, are you? Okay, you can't win.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Nah, but it was one of those really good like stories just to pop up from the weekend where you just saw someone looking really surprised that they were very, very fast.
Well, speaking of very quick people, let's get on our guest of the week.
Guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone, could be an athlete, could be a physio, or a complete unknown.
Of all the possible outcomes of finding out he had four holes in his heart, it seems unlikely that would make Kevin Quinn a better runner. Yet that's exactly what's happened. Following an 8-hour operation in February 2016, Kevin has gone from strength to strength. He won the virtual New York Marathon last year and recently helped Steph Davis to an Olympic qualifying time at the British Olympic Marathon Trials. Kevin, welcome to the Runner's World podcast. Let's start then with the Olympic Marathon Trials, because you were there pacing some of the female runners, paced Steph Davis to her qualifying time. That must have been an absolutely amazing experience. So can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, of course I can. It was a fantastic experience and super enjoyed it. So Tom Bedford, I've known Tom for a while. He contacted me and asked if I could help him out. Also, another one of my coaches that coaches in schools and does a bit of coaching for Team Real Runners, Josh Grace. I thought it'd be great, the two of us, pacing these women. I was a bit nervous, if I'm honest, because although I've been training and training's been going kind of fairly well, but you know, the times that these girls are running, I thought, oh my God, can I actually keep up to 30K? Like, this is gonna be hard work. But it was just a super well-organized event. There was a great buzz, really good atmosphere. Kew Gardens is beautiful. And it was wonderful to help, you know, the likes of Steph obviously achieve something incredible by qualifying for the Olympics.
You said sort of the atmosphere and there was a buzz. Because, I mean, I guess most people would assume that you'd need crowds and spectators for there to be that atmosphere. But as just the athletes together, I guess there's this sort of, I don't know, yeah, just the athletes themselves generate enough nervous tension to make it sort of feel really important.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, the start, we all warming up in Kew Gardens, people in different directions, you know, you see the lights of Callum, you know, Jake Smith, Lily Partridge, obviously Steph, Tomo, you have the best athletes and the best endurance athletes in the country there. Kew Gardens, 7 o'clock in the morning. It was just a unique, awesome experience. Dave Bedford, who's a character, he was there, gave us a pep talk before the start. You had the motorcycle with the cameras on. It was just a good buzz. And because it was laps, you know, you had a section where there was a lot of people handing the drinks out and kind of cheering the athletes on. So, you know, every time you come around to that section, there was a big roar. It was a brilliant, brilliant experience. I loved it.
I feel like the pacers are often kind of unsung heroes, I guess. Like we've all been in a race and probably relied on a pacer at some point. Do you think it was kind of more rewarding knowing that you've helped Steph get to the Olympics? Like, that's huge. It doesn't get bigger, really, does
yeah,
it?
Yeah, totally, Jane. I think that was it. It was like, right, okay, this is a big job. we've got to do. And to kind of tick that box and see it happen, it was super rewarding.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you say about the pressure, it's on you guys. There was, she was hot on your heels. There was no, there was certainly watching it. Yeah. She was, you know, it's a hard job as a pacer because you're pacing for everyone and not just one athlete. But when someone is quite clearly leading the charge and hot on your heels, did you feel that you had to sort of stick to the rules, or were you sort of tempted to like nudge on a bit just to help Steph go?
To be honest, we were asked to go to 30K with a pace. Go through in 74 minutes and keep that pace going up until 30K. So you kind of, that was your job. And, you know, we stuck to it. I think we went through in 74.05 and yeah, maybe got a little bit quicker to 30K. But you could tell Steph was itching to go.
It was really interesting watching it. Just sort of how she was, I mean, doing a perfect job of just sitting behind you, getting out of the wind and just sort of, and using you as exactly as you should a pacer. But yeah, you could sort of, she was sort of almost chomping at the bit to just get round you almost.
Yeah. Well, I said to Josh as we approached 30K, you know, should one of us carry on? Like, you know, do you want to carry on? And I'll be honest, I was relieved when Josh said, I'll carry on. So yeah, I was kind of showing a lot of teeth off and licking the window, so to speak, at 30K. So,
I think that's fair enough, Kevin. That's fair. I like the idea of just being able to pace a 74-minute half marathon. Just like, yeah, just pace someone to a 1:14 half marathon. Can we talk a little bit about your running then, Kevin? Because
Yeah, sure.
it's an amazing journey that you've been on with lots of ups and downs. But can you just tell us briefly how you got started? Because you've been running for all your life, right?
To go back, so my younger sister had cerebral palsy. I had a younger sister, Lucy, who had cerebral palsy, and she sadly died when she was 3 years old. And it was obviously just a terrible time for all of us, my mum, my dad, my brother, and my sister. And there was a local race, London Mini Marathon, but there was the trial race for my borough, and it was happening on the same day as her anniversary. And I'd taken up running just to kind of run and think about her. It was kind of my time to just think about Lucy. You know, I was this young boy. I guess it was my way of kind of dealing with it, feeling a bit of connection with her. So there was a race on her anniversary, and I was determined to make the team. And it was 9 kids qualified to participate in the London Mini Marathon, and I finished 9th, just made the team. So I was super excited. And that evening, I went home, and there was a program on ITV called The Help Squad, which was presented by Michael Parkinson and Annabelle Giles, I think it was. I may have got that wrong, but it was definitely Michael Parkinson. And they were looking for athletes who were participating in the London Marathon to raise money for adults and children with cerebral palsy. So I wrote a letter in and sent it off. And then about a week later, they contacted us. And they asked me to go on the show and go to this unit where all these children and adults were living with your cerebral palsy. And we raised some money for them, and we raised a hell of a lot of money. And off of the back of that, I kind of just, yeah, fell in love with running, really. Raised, I think, you know, thousands of pounds for this amazing charity, and had great experience at London Mini Marathon. So that was it. I was kind of hooked as an 11-year-old boy.
You were in at that point, yeah.
It's twofold phenomenal. I mean, an amazing story, but it's really interesting how you have got that. As a guy who's obviously just been pacing someone at the Olympic trials, it's obviously like a high-end performance side of running that you like, and competition and those sorts of things. But lots of people get into running because of the charity side, and I feel like it's so interesting to hear that was what spurred you into it.
Oh, definitely. I, you know, looking back, had that trial race not been on Lucy's anniversary, you know, I may have never taken running up properly, but I, you know, as I said, I used to run, but yeah, it was just the fact it was on her anniversary, and I thought, oh, this is a bit of a coincidence. And yeah, the whole money that we raised through charity, through the London Marathon for that charity, and seeing how many lives that it impacted, the parents as well, supporting them. That was it. I was hooked, and ever since then, been running.
So you did the mini marathon and you raised money, and when did you get spotted? Like, who kind of said, this kid's quick? Like, how did it go? What happened next?
I think I came through first scorer in the London mini marathon. So I'd qualified as this kid that had finished ninth in the trials. And then beat all those lads that beat me in the trials and come through first. And thought, you know what, I'm not bad at this. I'm all right.
Yeah.
I got picked up by a coach, carried on training, and then went to quite a few English schools as a kid, which is again a fantastic experience. And then just got quicker, I guess. Just trained harder. Just got quicker. Then went to university, and I'll be honest. Actually, I went to university, and my running probably took a little bit of a back step.
good. Just because of all the hard study. Because of all the hard study, though, Kevin. Right. Obviously, all that time. All that time in the library. Yeah, yeah.
Definitely, that was it. I had my head in the book, so a few runs had to be parked up. I came back. I was at Winchester University, loved it. Came back and then did a master's at St Mary's University. And anyone that knows St Mary's University, it's just a real running magnet, a hub of running. Bushy Park, Richmond Park, and you've got the Pace Sports Management had the East Africans quite often training in Bushy Park. So you go for a little run and you see these Olympic champions and world record holders. So it's, pretty inspiring. Then kind of really got back into it through St Mary's. And one of the lads that was at St Mary's, a guy called Peter Riley, good friend of mine, he was doing London Mini Marathon, and watched him run. It was his debut. He finished 12th, ran 2:14:11, I think it was. He ran 67:06, 67:05 splits. My dad kind of said to me, right, next year you've got to do that. I'd love to see you do it. He was super proud of Pete. And unfortunately, next day he died. So it was like, wow. Right, okay, I've got to do the London Marathon. And it was a rough time for all of us. But that was it. I was training for London Marathon, and I guess ever since then I've kind of considered myself a marathon runner.
You talk about your life, Kevin. I'm more aware of the amount of loss that is in there for you. And you also had this huge health scare following the London Marathon or a marathon where you realised something might be wrong with your heart. Can you tell us about that?
So I did London Marathon, kind of run it in memory of my dad. Again, raised loads of money for British Heart Foundation. He died of heart attack. And then took a couple years out from running marathons. Actually had a family. So my wife and I think my first marathon was in 2006. Did Hamburg Marathon, I think in 2012. And then did London Marathon in 2015. And really trained quite hard for us. I'd done the homework, so to speak. I ran 2:25, blew up a little bit, was a bit disappointed. But after the race, just felt something not quite right in my chest. I'd be lying in bed in the evening, and it just felt odd. Can't really describe it, just weird beats and a little bit of pain here, and then it'd go. And because now I had, got three young kids and everything that had happened with my dad, I thought, I should probably get this checked out. I'm sure it's nothing, but it might be something. So I went to my GP. They said, look, you just run this. You run this marathon. I'm sure it's fine. I'm sure there's nothing wrong with your heart. You've just run a 2:25 marathon. So I kind of thought, okay, that's cool. They think I'm okay. And then a couple of friends suggested going to Cardiac Risk in the Young. One of the guys a great friend of mine, Kojo Kareem, he was working at St. George's Hospital, and he said cardiac risk in a young are based at St. George's Hospital, you know, let's see if we can get you in there, and managed to get an appointment, and they did all the checks, and said, look, you know, we work on a traffic light system. One thing has flagged up amber, but everything else looks okay. So, you know, I'm sure you'll be absolutely fine. So I thought, okay, right, I've done the homework. I've had it checked out by two people now. Everything should be good. And as I was leaving, a young student nurse, she came jogging up and she tapped me on the shoulder and said, look, can we scan your heart just to compare athletes' hearts to the general public? And I was in a bit of a rush. I said, okay, look, I'm happy to do that, but, you know, how long would it take? And she said, oh, 10 minutes max. So took me into a room, laughing and joking. She scanned my heart and she just stopped talking. And then she was taking loads of images off the computer, screenshots. And then she just said, can you take a seat over there? I was sitting in the corner of this room for about 10 minutes and all of a sudden these different cardiologists came in, and the guy that just said we work on a traffic light system said, like, actually this is red here, like, you know, it's no longer amber, this is red. And okay, cool, what's wrong with it? And yeah, they said, look, you got four holes in your heart and the biggest is 1.78 centimeters. And
wow,
that's, yeah, massive.
Pretty serious. Yeah,
that's,
pretty
that sounds
big.
Huge for your heart. Like that's wow.
And that was just in one of the chambers. So yeah, I mean, basically, it was the top two chambers. It was huge. There was just a massive crossover of blood. They showed me on the computer, and you could just see the blood. Just going back and forth in these chambers, red and blue, red and blue. And they kind of said, look, we need to operate pretty quickly because the potential of a clot bypassing that hole and then finding its way to your brain. So yeah, the next 3-4 months was just whizzed by appointments and saw specialists, and yeah, it was just nuts, really.
God, so...
That's so mad. So that scan saved your life in a way.
Yeah, I mean, you know, who knows? It's who knows what would have happened, but I am forever indebted to Cardiac Risk in the Young and the student nurse as well. I mean, had she not picked it up, yeah, God knows what would have happened. Yeah, it was just bizarre. I remember saying to him, I've just run 2:25 for the marathon. How can I have holes in my heart?
Yeah, that is incredible. I mean, it's a kind of a testament, I guess, to how brilliant the human body is that it can still do these things. And like, you know what I mean? It sounds utterly ridiculous that you'd be able to run so quickly with a hole, basically a nearly 2-centimeter hole in the chamber of your heart. But in terms of recovery, like what happened? I mean, you had heart surgery, that's no small thing, and then how did you sort of recover from that? What was the prognosis?
So every appointment I went to, typical runner, you know, it was,
when can I run again?
Yeah, when can I run again, and if you patch me up, am I going to be quicker? So
right.
And they kind of said to me, you've been losing between 20-25% of oxygen every heartbeat your whole life, because I was born with this defect I never knew about. And I was desperate just to get back running. Actually, the week before I had heart surgery, I did a race, and it was a Parliament Hill. It was a tough cross country race, and I went off pretty hard, and then started to panic. It's that, you know, oh my God, I'm having heart surgery in 7 days time. What am I doing? And so I stopped, dropped out of this race. And I remember that whole journey, the realization of, oh my goodness, I'm actually having heart surgery. This is a big thing, because it just happened so quick that I never really had time to think about the seriousness of what was happening. So yeah, had the surgery at Guy's and St. Thomas's, and they were amazing. So good. You kind of went in, and they kind of kicked me out a couple of days later. But it was like a conveyor belt. There was loads of people having similar surgery there. My couple of nights on the ward, I met these two blokes, Jim. They were both called Jim, and they were both 72, and they just had a quadruple bypass. And it was great listening to their stories. And you know, they were telling me that they were good runners back in the day. And you know, I didn't tell them that I ran. but they were lovely, and you know, they had this, yeah, as I say, quadruple bypass, and you know, 12 hours later they were up and taking themselves to the toilet. You know, guys in St. Thomas's were phenomenal. And then yeah, they kind of just said, look, no running for 12 to 16 weeks. We need to make sure that the device in your heart kind of stays stable. If you run and you jig it about and it may dislodge, then you know, that's that could be really bad. That could be fatal. So didn't run for 16 weeks, and then just gradually built it up. You know, like it may have been, you know, like a 1 minute run, 1 minute walk, and you know, got up to a mile, got up to 2 miles. But within 12 weeks, I felt pretty fit again. Felt fit, felt almost like this legal EPO, so to speak. You know.
Yeah, right. Well, just having the normal levels of oxygen in your blood.
That's it, you know, since they had put this little bit, you know, patched it up, so to speak. And then I think it was like 6 or 7 months later, maybe a little bit longer, actually, maybe 7 to 8 months later, I did a cross-country race. I've been trying to win my whole life the Surrey Cross-Country Championships. And it's Division One. It's a, anyone that kind of knows the Division One Surrey League, it's a tough field. And one of the guys there who was hoping to win, I won't mention his name, but he came up to me and he said to me, you know, like, who's the guys to watch out for today? And I said, oh, you know, this guy, that guy, obviously didn't say myself. And the gun went off, and the first mile was 4:32, and I was leading it.
Wow.
And, cross country as well, yeah. Wow.
Cross country in Ripon Park. And I'd got away from the pack. I thought, you know, God, like, I'm either really fit here or this is stupid. Like, I'm going to die here today. This is it. It's all going to end. And, I managed to hold on for the win. And I think everyone was shocked. And, yeah, I guess it proved, you know, like, with a working heart, you know, an actual proper working heart, you know, maybe, you know, I could run quicker than I'd ever run before.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Is there any part of you, Kevin, like hearing you say that, I wonder if like Is there any regret that you maybe didn't find this out earlier? Because I guess by the time you found it out, maybe something like maybe the Olympics, for instance, they probably possibly weren't going to happen for you just due to your age or whatever. But if you maybe if you found out you had a, you know, you needed heart surgery here when you were 21, you might have gone on to do great things at an international level. Do you ever think about that?
Yeah, so you know, sometimes, but you know, you can't kind of look at your glass half empty, can you? You know, I've loved everything I've achieved, you know, through running, you know, having the heart fixed and obviously having the holes in the heart. And, you know, I'm just grateful that I'm able to, you know, I'm 41 now and I'm still running really well. And I guess maybe had I not had the heart patched up, I wouldn't be in this position where I am now, still running, you know, pretty fast. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, I sometimes do think, you know, I wonder what I could have run, but equally, I say to the young kids that run quicker than me, look, you know, I got pretty close to you and I had four holes in my heart. Imagine what I could have done with that. So that's my excuse, so to speak.
Fair enough. Yeah,
I think listening to this, and everyone who is going to listen to this tonight or tomorrow, whenever they're listening, you're so positive, and it's like, in fact, like your perspective is amazing that you've gone through all this and you're just like glass half full. Do you think the health scare, has it made you more grateful than ever to be able to log those miles?
Yeah, definitely. I'll be honest, the thing that motivates me and kind of, I guess, in terms of what being positive is, being a 9-year-old kid and seeing my sister, 3 years old, struggling every single day, you know, struggled to walk, struggled to talk, but she still smiled. And my parents, who were just incredible people, so positive with her, you know, you kind of see those struggles and you just think, right, okay, yeah, like, okay, I've had all this happen to me, but I draw upon that as my motivation to just be grateful that I am here doing something that I love and able to put one foot in front of the other.
Oh, amazing.
Definitely.
Yeah.
It's lovely.
It's really nice. It's really nice to hear that, because you don't often hear that so much from people at the sharp end of the sport. There's always a sort of, you know, there's a sort of a stoic athletic sort of chat that comes out, which is always very sort of like performance driven and all those sorts of things. Whereas actually when it's all founded in an inspiration or a desire to just seize an opportunity, it kind of comes that just then transcends the whole journey almost. And just the way you talk about running, it's really nice to hear. It's a very different take on getting into it, certainly from someone who's, you know, achieving, you know, great fast times.
Oh, cheers. Thank you.
I want to talk about the virtual New York Marathon, Kevin, because you actually won this virtual New York Marathon last year. So I think there was thousands of people doing their own version of New York. And can you tell us like how you went about it and how it felt to win a massive event like that?
Yeah, that was a brilliant experience also. New Balance contacted me and they asked if I could help out some athletes with their marathon journey leading into the virtual New York Marathon. And it was a fantastic campaign. They were putting this campaign on with Intersport and really privileged to be part of it. So I coached these three wonderful people, Esther, Haroon and Paul, through their journey. And I wasn't actually going to participate in the New York Marathon. I was just there just to help out with coaching. And I thought, you know, a couple of days beforehand, like, let's give it a go. Let's kind of see what kind of shape I'm in. Training had been going really well. So I kind of, you know, as you do, I had a big bowl of pasta the night before, had a cold bath, got all my gear together, and headed over to Dulwich Park, parked my car about a mile away, and run into the park and then ran tons of laps around the park. I had a couple of my guys from Team Real Runners, some of the athletes that I coached, they were going to run the first 10K with me. And we agreed maybe 6 minute mile in. And the first mile was, I think, like 5:30. I thought, God, I dropped these poor lads. They'd come down at 6:30 in the morning, driven miles to meet me. And I just ran away from them. And I thought, you know, I've I've made the bed now. I've got to lie in this. So, just felt great the whole way. Felt really good. Had New Balance, one of the chaps from New Balance, he was on the bike filming. There was a bit of motivation there. 223.50 or 48, I think it was, I ended up running. And I saw quite a few people in the park running the opposite way and could see their looks on their faces. Like, what is Kev doing? He's running pretty quick here. Like, but he must be on, you know, quite a few laps here.
You mentioned the Real Runners there, Kevin, which is the company you got. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and the kind of, I guess, kind of training philosophy that you've got there?
Yeah, so set Real Runners up in 2006, I think it was. So it's been going for a while, and we work with corporations, kind of wellbeing projects, and we work in schools delivering extracurricular programs. But I guess during COVID, we've really focused on trying to create a community, a running community. And it's been phenomenal. We've had people that have done, you know, your couch to 5K, and then others that are kind of targeting super fast marathons. And it's been brilliant. It's been great getting involved in the whole coaching setup and, you know, yeah, just seeing people strive and be the best versions of themselves. It's motivated me to continue to strive and run quick times myself.
So it's quite a broad thing. It's not just the sort of super quick runners that are part of this. It's actually runners of all abilities are part of Real Runners.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, we have people that are hoping to cover a mile for the first time that just want a bit of accountability and some support and some motivation. And then we have others that, you know, are hoping to run sub 2:30 for the marathon. So it's a big range there. And we have now, we recently put together a fantastic Instagram running club whereby we have close to 100 people now that are part of that. And I will set a training schedule, a weekly training schedule with two interval sessions and different tasks, different virtual events for them to participate in. And then the next day I'll stick on a video explaining the purpose and how to approach those training sessions. And that's been great because, you know, you can only coach so many people. The bespoke coaching is fantastic, but, you know, time is limited, whereas this, it's much more accessible to however many people. And it's great. I'm loving watching that community grow and seeing people comment on one another's Strava's post. And yeah, I mean, it really is creating a fantastic buzz and terrific community. And it's pretty cheap as well. It's next to nothing, really. New Balance have finally supported that as well. So every month, New Balance are donating a pair of trainers. We're doing a raffle to all the members, and yeah, it's been a couple of happy runners there that, you know, that have been picked as the monthly raffle winners. So
yeah, I bet. Yeah,
everyone loves new shoes. That's yeah
definitely definitely.
Who doesn't?
Yeah.
Do you have any? Were you ever given any advice when you first started running? And running marathons? And do you have any sort of wonderful soundbite advice for anyone who wants to run their best marathon?
So yeah, I think, you know, one, you have to do the homework. Two, you've got to listen to your body. Doesn't matter if you've got a coach out there that, you know, or you're following a plan online, your body is the best judge of how you are feeling. So it's super important to listen to that. You know, if you don't, you just end up putting yourself in a hole and just keep on digging deeper into that hole. So listen to your body on that journey. If it's telling you a rest day it needs, listen to it. And then as you approach that race, I think, you know, kind of the best bit of advice I can give is probably get bored before you get tired. You know, you're going to feel great early on, but I promise you, you won't feel great at mile 20. So get bored before you get tired is a good bit of advice.
I love
that's
that.
That's good, that. Yeah, I like that. That's good. Kevin, thanks so much for making the time to speak to us on the Runners World podcast. Such an amazing story on so many levels. The comeback aspect, the inspiration for getting into running in the first place, and also the advice for other people who'd be looking to make their own running journey. So thank you again for your time.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for having us. It's been great chatting to all of you guys.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. Thanks very much to our guest, Kevin Quinn, and to you, of course, for listening.
After a very brief hiatus, you can once again subscribe to 3 issues of Runner's World for just £5. Head to head to hearstmagazines.co.uk/runnersworldpodcast to get this exclusive listener offer.
The Runner's World podcast is available on Acast, iTunes, and all your favourite podcast apps. Just search Runner's World UK and click subscribe. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing in context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's GRAMMARLY.com/podcast. Easier said, done.